Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. First of all, I want to thank everyone from around the world who has been listening to, supporting, and sharing this show. It's good to know that there are other people out there who enjoy this part of the martial arts as much as I do. Also, I have a big announcement this week. Chop Talk has been picked up by iTunes. So if you're an iTunes user, please click on the show, give it 5 stars, and write a review, preferably a positive one. Thanks go out to my good buddy Chris Gavin for making this happen and taking care of the setup and dealing with all the technical issues that are way above my head. This week's show is the second half of my interview with karate legend James McClain. Mr. McClain starts the show by opening up about his difficult childhood, describing how he has been on his own since he was 9 years old. He goes on to talk about Elvis losing Priscilla to her karate teacher Mike Stone and trying to prevent Elvis from doing something drastic. He wraps up the first segment by talking about teaching for Cecil Patterson in Nashville in the 1960s. After the break, Mr. McClain speculates about what the Okinawans would think about his dojo, and we discuss Morihiga Ona and the state of Goju-Ryu in Okinawa. In the second half of the show, Mr. McClain tells a sweet story about introducing Shuri-Ryu chief instructor Robert Bowles to his wife Sandy. He goes on to talk about giving up his school, car, and everything he owned to join the army, only to be turned away and left with nothing. At the end of the show, he tells a few stories about his friends Ross Scott and Glenn Keeney before we leave for the official dojo hangout, the Springwater. To find out more about Sensei McClain and his school in Nashville, go to www.koshokarate.wordpress.com. As always, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
You're originally from Tennessee, right? That's where you grew up?
I was born in Alabama.
You're born in Alabama, okay.
My father died, and never really got to know him. And my mom and I and my sister and brother, we moved to McMinnville, Tennessee.
Okay.
And I left there when I was like... My uncle was moving to Peoria, Illinois, to work at Caterpillar. That was a big...
Sure.
Big deal back then. So I went with him. To Peoria, and that's how I got to Peoria.
How old were you when you went up there?
13.
13, wow.
So I had no normal life at all. I mean, like,
yeah,
anything like that.
Sounds like it. So you said you were on your own since you were 9, though?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, where'd you go when you were 9?
Just stayed with different people and stuff.
Oh, man.
I ended up in Louisville, Kentucky with some girl and guy, and they were... Hell, I didn't know at the time, but hell, they were all hooked up on drugs and shit. Hmm. I didn't know anything about drugs, anything about it.
You were just a kid.
Yeah.
You hadn't been exposed to it.
He was then.
So here I was, stuck in this apartment. I wouldn't see him for a week or two. I'm just running around.
Well, that's not bad. You have the run of the place.
Yeah, I guess. But I didn't know what I was doing.
If you're 10.
Well, yeah, that's true.
It's crazy. I wouldn't recommend it for anybody.
No, that doesn't sound like it. But it's good that you found something that you could, like you said, you could belong to. And you could.
That's right.
You know, really cling on to.
And part of.
And it's taken you a lot of places. All over the country,
all over the
tournaments,
world, yeah.
Seminars. All the people you know. I mean, even the guys now. You know, it's been like the people you've met and the people you've got to know are like your, you know, became the family.
Sure. For you. Absolutely. All the AWODs, they came up to Michigan. That's when I first met them. I was in 67.
Did they, what was he telling me? They locked you in the steam cabinet?
Yeah, we was up there. we was there in Peoria, and since they had this one dojo right downtown, up, and then they had this health club with all these steam cabinets and all that kind of stuff in, of course, since they had access to it.
Right.
So is this like a steam cabinet where your head would be sticking out and you're sitting in like
like a sauna.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they locked the dang door. Couldn't get out. I was beating on the door. And of course, they tried to go and kill him or something. But.
Which you would have.
Boy. That's crazy.
So after all that stuff, when did you start coming back into Nashville? Like between Kansas City and Michigan and other
before
places
all,
like that?
Before all that. Before all that.
Before all that.
Oh, yeah.
He was young. You were like 18, right? When you started coming back, like when you were living with Mr. Patterson and stuff?
Something like that. Cecil Patterson, he was in the water restyle system. And he worked for the Alcohol Beverage Commission at the time. Used to raid steels and all that kind of crap.
That's when you had the large dojo up on Murphy Road.
You've been so many places, it's hard to figure out which one it is, because you've been...
Well, as you get older, you just forget shit anyhow.
So it's senility and experience. Yeah. It's a combination of the two.
Yeah, Mr. Patterson was a direct student. Later on, more, he was a direct student of Otsuka, the Wateroo guy. So
okay.
He was like... He's like the sort of father of Wateroo in America.
Right.
Okay.
But when Mr. McLean first came back, you know, he had maybe trained a couple years at that point, like while he was in the service over there.
Okay.
So Mr. McLean was, you know, really, you know, probably more qualified to teach at that time. And he's, you know, so, well, why don't you just live with me and you can teach the classes
okay.
and stuff like that. Because he was already at a pretty high level. Sure. As far as his technical, you know, ability to do the techniques.
He'd been living in the dojo for several years and training full time.
Yep.
Was that when Kennedy got shot?
63.
63? Yeah.
You were in Nashville then?
Yeah.
And you had a school up, you had your own school by then?
Well, Cecil Patterson had a dojo, and he more or less just like, when I came, I don't know how to teach him.
You were teaching for Cecil in 63.
Yeah.
I thought that was over in East Nashville. No, up there?
Right up here.
It's right up the street. Okay.
Big old school.
That's where Mr. Gaddy's used to be.
Right,
40 wasn't there yet.
Some of those black and white pictures with the big room, where it looks like there's a big room, big steel, like air conditioner on the side. That's what he said, where that was that school up there.
Yeah.
Large room.
Got some pictures of it.
Yeah, large warehouse kind of a room with
huge
mirrored wall and black
then
walls.
Then in the back there's a judo mat.
It's kind of a stage area on one side of it.
And then the back of that was dressing rooms and all that.
Huh. That's when you could afford real estate around here.
Well, it would have been
afford real estate.
It would have been before 440 was right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right up in that area.
There wasn't anything between there and the other side of West End.
Yeah, Nashville wasn't anything back then.
So you were telling me the last time when we were you went up to the Nationals in Peoria. You were telling me a story about Elvis and Mike Stone.
Elvis and Mike Stone, yeah.
Yes. So Mike Stone, so correct me if I get this wrong. So Priscilla started taking private karate lessons with Mike Stone.
That's it.
And that's who she left Elvis for. She left Elvis for the karate teacher.
Right.
Right?
He was a Hawaiian guy, right?
That's when Elvis started taking
Mike
karate.
Stone, yeah. He's right. A big old Hawaiian guy.
Yeah, he was a
big, strong
Mike
guy.
Mike Stone was tough.
As far as the tournament circuit goes?
I met him when he was a brown belt.
Okay.
Way back. He was with his sergeant, Pearson or sergeant somebody, and he run kata and, you know, everything really tough. Really tough guy. Stone was tough.
Was he in your generation, as far as the competition goes, was he in your generation or was he with that generation after?
He was like, he was like right after me.
Okay. So Elvis wasn't happy about that, right?
He was going to have him kill. And then we got to him and said, well, no, that wouldn't be a good idea because then you just have a walk.
Right. Because Mike Stone was involved with...
Well, you had Highway and Mafia, they call him, and he was connected. Stone was just tough, man. He was crazy.
And all the other karate people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real karate people.
Yeah.
Well, Elvis was a real karate man, right? I saw him. He had a sequin gi and everything.
Well, who was it promoted? I forget who it was.
Kang Ri?
I think it was. Yeah. Supposed to be seventh Don.
Yeah, and one of them big old huge belts. four inch wide belt.
Which is, you know, crap.
And rhinestones in it.
Elvis maybe.
They say when he started in the military.
Okay.
And the guy that he first started under was like, you know, a real tough karate guy. I can't remember his name. It's like a Polish, kind of Slavic kind of sounding name. Mm-hmm. And he was an airborne guy, and this is up in Fort Campbell. And he was like maybe like a Shitoru guy or one of those sort of Japanese styles like that.
Yeah.
And they said that when he first started, you know, he was on the right track. Mm-hmm. They didn't really like run a lot of Elvis. They didn't really run a lot of kata or anything, but they would spar real hard all the time, and the guy trained him real hard. Similar to what Mr. McLean's talking about with Master Capo, with a lot of calisthenics.
Sure.
A lot of hard sparring, you know. Tough, maybe not a whole lot of technical knowledge, but real tough. But then once, you know, he was so famous, then you get all these, you know, guys that'll just want to tell you that you're great when you're really not, and tell you that you can do all these magical techniques, and you know.
And if he buys you a new Cadillac every time you're promoted,
yeah,
that's a little incentive there too, right?
You got the idea.
So you tried to join the military at one point, right? Is that when you were in Michigan and you tried to join?
I tried to join them. Yeah, I wanted to go, and you know, they wouldn't let me go because I had flat feet.
Because Vietnam.
They won't let you go if you had flat feet.
Okay.
I guess from all the
marks. So you weren't drafted. You had volunteered.
I wanted to go to service, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did draft me.
Okay.
So I went there, and the guy said, we'd love to have you with your background, but we can't take you. I said, well, what do you mean you can't take me? What's wrong with me? There ain't nothing wrong with you. He says, you got flat feet? And I guess from all the marching and whatever, I don't
running,
know.
Why. Yeah.
Wow. Because your brother was in the military, right?
Yeah, my half-brother. He was a lieutenant colonel.
Wow. And that's where you had originally learned about what martial arts was.
Yeah, he showed me a couple of judo movements, and he said he knew my situation. You know, right? Mm-hmm. Out of my mind. He says, you need to get into the arts, and that's what he told me. He's the one that got me really basically. So showed me a few judo movements and stuff.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. view daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
I wonder what the old Okinawan guys would think if they came over here and seen a dojo.
I think it's pretty cool.
I wonder what they think about
it. I think that's just about right. Yeah. Looks like home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd probably be comfortable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of the guys I know, he lived in about a 3 or 4 story high concrete building, and he had a little shack on top, and that was his dojo. And it was maybe the size of this room back here total. Mm-hmm. And he had different training equipment that he tried to put together. He had this he had a round post in the center with pads put on it, and then it went out for the sides for kind of support, and so he and little brackets that came off so he could work his blocks and do that. And he had a bag off in the corner that he could tie up. And it was all sort of stuff that he had come up with and figured out how to train.
Who is this?
Tomei-san was his name. He was a black belt at Miyahira's school.
Mm-hmm.
But he had his own place also. A lot of the people at that school that I worked out
what,
in.
What style was it?
Shorin-ryu.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big style.
It was you know, like our cousins. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. A lot of the fundamentals were the same.
Mm-hmm.
They ran a lot of the same katas, but maybe a little bit differently. The stances were a little higher,
right?
Or you know, they would do a shuto, you know, here instead of here.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you could learn it pretty quickly. It's like, okay, we're running basai, and there's small changes, but it's the same thing.
Basically, the same kata,
right? So a lot of the people that worked out at that school had their own school somewhere. So his was on the top of his house. Another guy had one.
Miyahira is a real highly respected karate person in Okinawa.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was one of the people.
He was Shorin-ryu guy.
Okay. He was one of the four people that the Japanese government gave, four of the karate guys that the Japanese government declared living cultural treasures.
Mm.
So there was Nagamine, Shoshin Nagamine, who everybody knows, of course.
Mm, yeah, Mr. Kaplan.
There's a Nakazato, who there's a Shorin-ryu, Shorin-kan guy. So guys like Eddie Bethea in Indiana, or Neil Stoltzmark in Wisconsin, or some of his more famous students. And then there's Miyahira, was the third one. And then there was another guy who was a Goju guy whose name I can never remember. But the Japanese government declared these guys living national treasures because they had so much knowledge about the martial arts. And that's whose dojo I was working out at primarily in Okinawa. But see, he was in his 90s. When mm-hmm. I started working out there, he was 90 years old. He had recovered from a heart attack, had come back, started teaching, had sort of a relapse, and so he was under pretty heavy medical care when I worked out there. But so all of his students at the dojo were other guys who were ninth dons, eighth dons, seventh dons, right. Guys who had worked out with him for maybe 60 or 70 years, some of them. And so these guys had gone out and opened other schools in Okinawa also. But they would come together still at the original dojo and work out together. But these guys, they'd invite me to go out and work out at their place.
Well, that's cool.
Now and then. So it was an interesting experience to get the chance to work out with all those other guys.
How were they? Pretty good?
Yeah, they're real good. Yeah, absolutely. Real good. The workout was normally, they'd start doing kata, so they'd do they do like the 4 or 5 most basic katas. Mm-hmm. They take a little break. You could get a drink if you wanted. You could work on your own stuff if you wanted. And then they work some sort of application with you.
So one guy was real into full contact sparring.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always want to work with me on different sort of kicking drills and application drills for sparring. And then they'd stop and they'd work out again, do about three katas and take a break. And then you could go out, hit the Makiwara, or work some training drills with somebody else. And then some guy would usually pull me in and say, okay, now we're going to work Bunkai. So, okay, so in Naihachi, you know, you do this move and this is how you do it. And so they'd have some sort of, you know, self-defense technique or something like that based off of a Bunkai. And then they keep going through until they work through all the katas in their system, every class, and that would be the end of it.
That was interesting.
Good. You'd fit in good with those guys over there.
Yeah.
They got a passport?
No.
So we need to see if our government will declare you a living national treasure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think they do that over here.
I mean, if this was Japan.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be any problem with that.
No, we'd fill out the paperwork and you'd have it. They'd have a nice big certificate.
We'd get back in 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They just did that with Higona.
Oh, did they?
I believe so.
Okay.
No. I could be wrong.
I'm not shocked if they did.
What's that? These,
fix your house up.
The head of the Goju-ru over in Okinawa is Morio.
The head of one of the Goju-ru.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people take issue with that, Richard. The other Goju-ru people.
Yeah, Kuba.
They're all the only one that really does it right.
Yeah. Well, we'll get. If we get Kuba's the guy I went to South Africa with. We'll get him drunk on red wine. He loves his red wine. Just get a couple bottles out here. We'll get him drunk and then ask him about Higona.
And then there's the other, and Ichi Miyagi is the one that's like the primary Higona's not doing it right guy, right?
Right.
Higona's Shikodachi is too deep and all that.
But they're all going to say that about one another. I'm sure Higona's going to say it about those guys. But yeah, he's, as far as worldwide goes, he's definitely the most well-known Goju guy out there. His organization is huge, and every 4 years they put on a giant seminar in Okinawa, and all the different parts of his organization around the world come in and work out there. He leads the, you know, and you get a chance to work out with him, which is nice, because he'll lead the workouts, and they'll have a special group for, okay, these are non-Goju people that are here to work out, and they'll work with you and everything. And that's when I saw him. When I saw him, he had, that's what I was telling you the other day about his knuckles.
He's the one famous for hitting that big stone, too.
So, yeah, because he punches a rock.
Right.
He sits around all day and does back fists and punches this big rock he has in his dojo. His knuckle, I've never seen anything like it. It looks like actual rocks growing out of his knuckles. So the skin's around here, and there's this nasty thing that looks like just a rock coming out here.
Just all solid.
Just completely solid and just jagged. The callus is jagged. From here back to here, his hand's purple. Just from...
Really?
It looks like a bruise, but it's just... It's always there. He had calluses like you'd have on the bottom of your feet,
mm-hmm.
here and here.
Damn.
From back fisting this rock so much.
This rock.
I talked to a girl who was there. See, he has a lot of international students. Most of his students aren't people that are from Okinawa, lived in Okinawa. They're people that were members of his organization that have moved there, mm-hmm. or there for a short amount of time to train. And so I talked to this woman who was there when he was in the dojo one day practicing, punching this rock. It's the same rock he's punched for 45 years. He hit it, and it cracked.
And didn't he get the rock from some village? And the rock is famous. The rock supposedly belonged to some other famous karate people. My understanding is that the Roberto Ship is that he's like a fifth dan under him and has been over there and trained under him a lot. He's Shannon's Goju-ru teacher. Yeah. He said that he bought that rock from a village.
Oh, okay.
The rock sat in this village way out in the country in Okinawa, like in the middle of the village. And it was like their little landmark, their little claim to fame, because somebody or another, I don't know if it's Matsumura or maybe it was that guy that they called the Sergeant.
Yeah, okay.
Yabu, Kensu Yabu. Yeah. Might have been him. One of those guys had this rock in the middle of the village, and he would hit it. And he, like, bought the rock from him.
Okay.
And took it to the desert.
So it wasn't just a rock he found somewhere.
No. It's a special rock. No, it's a special rock. The rock was a special rock. It was like another a karate person in the 19th century's rock.
Okay.
It's from the 19th century.
Oh, the rock's got lineage.
The rock had lineage. Yeah.
Well, now there's two rocks.
two pieces.
Yeah. So it was. He split it in two, and he just didn't know. He just. She said he just was speechless. He just. There it is.
He couldn't believe he'd broken it.
So this is the new rock.
He's got a new one.
This is a new rock.
Well, you got to start over.
He is. A new rock. Is shorter than Richard.
Yes.
Really? I saw him with Roberto one time. I didn't like really get to formally meet him. He didn't really introduce him to me.
That's what he
but
does.
He's smaller than
he
Richard, height-wise.
He just drops his fist
not width-wise.
Height-wise, yeah, not width-wise. He's really short.
What did he do?
He's really stocky. His fist right hands on. And feet yeah. are and, like, enormous.
Power onto him.
Enormous. I've never seen. He really looks like a hobbit. He's so short. His feet and hands are enormous in comparison to how tall he is. Like really out of proportion. Really interesting looking dude.
Huh.
Like, he's so different looking than any other person that I've ever seen. Like, if you saw him at the airport, you would, like, look at him.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't, it's not just short like a Japanese person
a trip.
Is usually shorter. I mean, it's like he really is, like, a little tiny guy.
Yeah.
Except for he's also, like, really hoss in his own way.
Yeah, he's built like a fireplug.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a miniature Tony Awad.
Yes,
that's what he looks like. He's like a miniature Tony Awad.
If you shrunk Tony Awad,
yeah, by Tony was shorter, by 30%, shorter and then him. Smaller. But like you know how Tony's short, but his hands and feet are real big. This guy's same way like this.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend. Family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.
Tony, he's still active? Or?
No, he hasn't been back.
He had a lot of injuries. He had a knee surgery and a shoulder surgery.
Yeah, I haven't. I've only seen him twice since I moved to Cincinnati in 2010. Once he came to a big like a seminar, a big event we had. Maybe it might have been one of the times that you came down.
Last time I was at there, we had pads.
That was it.
We doing punches on it.
That was it.
Yeah, it was after that. He came like...
Maybe the time before or something.
He's been there when I came up there by myself before.
And then the other time was just a few weeks ago. He was over at Mr. Awad's house having lunch or something, and I stopped by there. And
who was this?
Tony okay. Awad. And I had stopped by and said hi, and hey, Mr. Awad, you know, good to see you.
Yeah.
So when I was going to school at Miami, I would drive down to Cincinnati and work out maybe once a week or something like that. And at that time, he was the guy that normally taught the classes. Mm-hmm. So I worked out with him way more than anybody else,
yeah.
When I came down. I think I worked out with Mr. Hammond once and Tom Sr. once.
Yeah.
And every other time it was with Tony. And I really liked it. He was a good teacher and real good at the short punches, and he could get those giant bags just moving.
He can hit real hard.
Tony?
Yeah, I heard some guys were telling a story about Mr. Vecchioli told a story about him this last time at the Nationals. I'm trying to remember, his teacher is this guy named Ron White. and they went.
The Canadian, he's on the blue collar comedy tour.
A different guy. They went to go fight at a tournament, and Tony was there. And Ron told him, "Do not try to hit that guy with a back fist. He's gonna break your ribs. If you come up this way, he's gonna snatch your arm and he's gonna break your ribs." And he did it. He reached up, tried to do a back fist. Tony snatched his arm and just totally broke his ribs. Just like, he said, Mr. White was so mad at him the whole way back to Muncie. He wouldn't stop for him to pee. He wouldn't let him get another. I fucking told you. Don't try to hit the back fist. If you try to hit him with the back fist, he broke your fucking ribs. So you just sit over there and be miserable.
Yeah, that's why he's pretty good karate guy.
I told you not to do it. Apparently, Tony had a real record for that. That if you did anything where you did any kind of movement where you reached, opened up your rib cage, he would just snatch you and move in and.
You met him at.
Tony?
I saw him pick up a guy at the last time that he competed at the Nationals. This is in like probably 2009 or something. He went to spar this guy who all will remain unnamed on our recording here.
That's fine.
And the guy threw a kick at him.
It's you.
And no.
Oh, okay.
White belt.
Okay.
Yeah. No, this is another grown guy his age. The guy threw a roundhouse kick at him. He grabbed his pants, picked him up, had him up. Held up by one fucking leg and hit him in the groin with their
reverse punch.
And damn near knocked the guy out with this reverse punch to the groin. I'm surprised the guy didn't go to the hospital. He got disqualified. And boy, it really pissed him off too that he got disqualified. I mean, I just looked over there and see right as he got the guy's pant leg and had him up. And the guy's like, was like hanging in the air.
Foot off
boom!
The ground.
Yes! Oh, he was holding him up in the air by his one foot. Boom! It was something else.
He looks about like a guy that'd knock you out.
Jesus, he is a guy that would knock you out.
I worked out with him. We were doing those short punch drills with those thick upholstered pads, you know, that's up there. And, I mean, everybody is punching really hard. That's not surprising. You can feel it through the pad. That's not surprising that you can feel it through the pad. But that's the only one that's like, you'd base down and hold the pad and he'd still rock you back.
Yeah.
Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
Mr. Bowles.
Bob Bowles.
Bob Bowles.
Bob, I don't know if I ever told you this or not.
All right.
See, I was going with this lady out of Chicago, which had a lot of money. And so Bob was up at Grand Rapids or something like that. I said, I'm going to go to Chicago. I said, why don't you go with me, Bob? He said, well, what am I going to do? I said, well, you just go with me. Everything will be fine. So I called her up, this lady in there. Told her I was going to bring a friend with me. She just said, be fine. So I took him up there, and we were going to go out. I mean, this old lady was going to go out. A really foxy looking thing. And so I left. She had her daughter, which is the one he's married to right now.
Okay.
This is
Sandy.
Yeah, Sandy. And so
you were going out with her mom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her mom. She'd buy me cashmere sweaters and all kinds of stuff, sport coats. And I probably shouldn't tell you all this stuff.
You got to tell somebody.
I don't bunk it. Yeah, you got to tell somebody. So I'd say.
So we went up there and Bob's with me and. So I said, Bob, you want to go? And she said, well, Bob, you just stay here, if he wants to, with my daughter and all that. And that's how he met his old lady. And he fell in love with her.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the story behind that.
Wow, that's how they met, man.
Yeah, that's
so. How
they met.
Yeah. If it wasn't for you, they never would have met. They never would have fallen in love, and they're still together today.
Yeah, they're still together. Bob, I guess he's doing pretty good, making a lot of money and stuff.
I think so. Well, he has his organization, the ISA, International Shrew Organization.
Is that what it is?
And he's got a good chunk, if not everybody, but the majority of the Shrew people are involved in that in some way.
Right.
Either real active or kind of on the periphery. And yeah, I think he's doing good. He has a big seminar every year in March.
Right.
And usually gets a pretty good turnout. I haven't been for a couple of years, but I'll try to go if I've got the money and I've got the time. And seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, he's tighter than hell.
Financially?
Oh yeah, he's tight, man.
Yeah.
He watches. He won't just spend money. He just he's tight.
How'd you meet him? You were probably on the tournament circuit and traveling around and working out and everything. Or maybe at Mr. Therese's dojo when you were out.
Yeah, Bob was a blue or green belt or something there in Phoenix.
Okay.
And I was out there training. That's how I met him. Well, matter of fact, the school I had in Michigan, I thought I was going to get drafted. Mm. So I give Bob Bowles my school.
Okay. Gave it to him? Gave it to him or sold it to him?
I was giving it to him.
Okay.
So I thought I was going to get drafted. So I went to Earn and like they wouldn't let me in there because I had flat feet. I said, oh shit. I'm thinking, damn, I've given my dojo away. So I go back there and I walk in and there's my dojo.
What are you doing here? You're supposed to be in Vietnam.
One of them crazy things.
You know? Oh man.
Yeah, I'd done set my car back. I'd brand new little '67 Mustang, the car and all that stuff. And I done let everything go, and I was all ready to go. And
this was
came
in
back
like
and
68,
walked in
67,
somebody else
had
my 68. Dojo or something like that. Jeez.
This was like '67 or '68 when you were.
I don't remember what the year.
Yeah. But they, right when it was getting real hot over there.
Damn. You'd think the Army would have found something for you to do. It's like, okay, you don't have to go march through the jungle, but
well, the
you
sergeant,
stay here and teach these guys hand-to-hand combat.
Well, the sergeant out there I talked to, and he wanted me in really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time. He said, hell, man, you have it made.
Of course.
With your background and stuff.
Yeah. Man. Everything. Martial arts.
Right.
Genetics?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You said, hell, you'd have made. I said,
people in Mr. McClain's family's probably been stone cold killing motherfuckers for like thousands of years. You know? I mean,
I was already go. I didn't give them a dojo up. So I walked back. I go back to Michigan there. And I get back. My school, man. I don't have school anymore. That's his school.
Oh, man.
That's crazy.
You had to start over.
It was a nice little setup. You had a dojo downstairs, and, three stories, and I think four apartments in it and all that stuff.
Hey, man. Yeah.
Pretty good setup. About the size of that old house over there.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
See, I went with Ross Scott and we were hanging around together a lot. So I only had like just change of clothes, my gi, OB and that kind of stuff. And I went up there to hang around. Me and Ross was hung around about 3 months, partying and all this kind of stuff. So I ended up staying at Mr. Keeney's dojo and didn't really have any clothes, so he brought me some clothes over of his, and I wore his clothes and done all that kind of stuff. It's kind of interesting. Wow.
Do they fit? Isn't he a little taller?
Now, Ross Scott could really hit really hard, right?
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, Keeney was about, Keeney's about the same size I am.
Okay.
Not Ross Scott's close, Mr. Keeney.
I've seen some
Ross?
Of the
Ross could hit really.
Kumite videos of him like in like point sparring videos, yeah, where he's hit these guys with these reverse punches. Oh man, I mean, bad. So hard in the body where it just looks like, how is this guy not just completely done? You can see their face when he hits them, just like they're about to throw up. He hits them so hard.
Felt like that about an hour and a half ago. I know. I think Mr. England hits you one time and he goes, I just saw it on your face. I was like, oh, damn, he's about to puke. He did. He kept on going.
Well, Ross was fighting this big old, well, it was Contact, you know, big old black guy.
Uh-huh. Was it Everett Eddy? Monster Man. I know that was one of his famous fights.
I don't know. It might have been Everett Eddy. He was a big old boy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Yeah, he's really good, too, Detroit. Right? Yeah. He could really take a shot, too, right?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Ross Scott could just really get hit. I mean, you could hit him just as hard as you wanted to hit him. And
So wait a minute, though. But was he more on the full contact kickboxing thing or both? The traditional karate
both.
Thing?
Both.
And yeah, could run kyle real well, too.
Oh, he's all
he's a come,
karate.
You know, come kyle black belt. I mean, he did all the karate tournaments. And even after he competed in full contact, he still would compete in the point sparring in USKA, you know, in alliance tournaments. There's Johnny Linebarger is was a black belt that was a world champion, USKA champion from Phoenix, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And he has a bunch of fights up, real good filmed ones from the 80s, that where Ross Scott was still competing in the point sparring.
Well, he kind of quit coming to the tournaments too. I never met him.
Who, Ross?
Yeah, that was he didn't. I've never met him either. That was
2008 was the first time.
Still, when William started, he was still around. So
yeah, because I know one of them rolls of film I got.
Where did William go?
Man. I don't know.
I think he just walked down the street. He walked down the street.
He went to Springwater or something.
Some of the rolls of film I got from William, I had pictures of them at the tournament at Paramarquette and stuff with Ross and shaking hands. But I guess he had quit coming to tournaments by the time we started going to.
I have to meet him sometime. I bet he's got some good stories.
Shh. Who's that, Ross?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we used to hang around together a lot. He fought this old guy. Big old black guy from Detroit. Effort Eddie, they call him. Mm-hmm. Big old guy. Big thick chest. I was with another friend of mine. Hell, he was 6'4", like 260 or something like that. Boxed a lot. And we was watching him, and he said, I don't think too much of that guy. And I said, well, you watch him a few minutes. He's not changing that. And Ross, this man, I don't know, he just all of a sudden just unglued on this guy and just knocked horribly hit this guy.
Beat the shit out of him.
Oh, hit him so hard and just knocked him cold and brick head.
Was this
it's not a whole lot of people that can hit that hard, that can punch that hard, that are big guys like that. They're also real loose.
Yeah, real loose.
Because Ross Scott's legs were real loose. Big, you know, most big guys that can hit that harder.
They go down. He go down in the full splits without any problem.
He bring his leg up.
He's in one of those fights too, like in a ring, like in a square boxing type ring.
Not any bits. Boom! I mean, just shake hands. Just real strong.
He could take it and he could dish it out. Yeah,
but they fought him too much. He got in with a
group that of
people
exactly
that didn't really
done.
Do him right. They would fight him all the time.
When they first started the, what do they call it then?
PKA.
Yeah.
Like a kickboxing.
Circuit. PKA kickboxing.
Yeah, you can't.
You fight too often?
Oh, yeah. Fight him sometimes every other week.
Man.
You can't sustain that.
That'll bang you up quick.
Oh, yeah.
Do y'all want to go down to the spring water for a minute? You going down to the bar for a minute since then?
Yeah, I want to go down there. I got to.
Y'all want to go down there? He ain't never been to the spring. You been there?
No. Yeah, let's go down there.
Yeah, you kind of got to. He's kind of got to go to the spring water.
Well, he's right, being in the dojo, you know.
That's the dojo.
None of these guys go down there much.
We don't really go down there that much, but it's like our local, you know. It's like the dojo bar.
I put a pretty good number of hours in there though over the years. I don't go down there anymore, but
we used to. Yeah,
used to for sure. Even before I started working,
we'll go down there first.
Is that right?
Have a couple beers.
Yeah, I was going to go down there anyway.
There you go.
Sounds good.
All right, now we got to take Nate down to the spring water.
That's all for my interview with karate legend James McClain. Thanks to Mr. McClain and his students for their hospitality during my trip to Nashville. Tune in next week when we present a special on-the-road episode of Chop Talk. Nihei Dibiru and Matayap. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.